Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I'm Kara Miller. How many times a day do you Google? For many of us, Google is like breathing. It's a daily need. But what happens when Google just isn't enough, when you don't want a random assortment of web pages to weed through, but you just want a simple list? So let's say you want a simple list of popular Thanksgiving foods, say, or a list of Simon and Garfunkel songs, or maybe a list of iPhone apps that'll help you manage your money. That's what Cynthia Rudin wanted, and she couldn't find it. So she created it, and it may change the way we investigate what's on the internet. Cynthia Rudin is an assistant professor at MIT Sloan School of Management, and Ben Lethem is a PhD student at MIT. Thanks very much to both of you for being here.
Thanks, Kara.
Yeah, thank you. Nice to meet you.
So, Cynthia, I'm going to start with you. How did you get started thinking about generating lists on the internet?
Well, I initially wanted to do this because I kept getting stuck in traffic jams in Boston. And these are traffic jams I could have avoided because they were due to planned events where roads were closed, like a street fair or some kind of cultural festival. But I didn't know about these events in advance because there's no single complete list of events in Boston. There are only a bunch of incomplete lists on a lot of different websites. And so we initially started this project so that we could grow a list of events in Boston, starting with just the events we knew about. And so we did. We grew a giant list of events in Boston, starting with things like the Boston Arts Festival and the Boston Harbor Fest. And the algorithm that we developed turned out to be really general, and it can grow lists of pretty much anything. You just seed it with a few examples of whatever you like, and it grows more examples of things like that.
Okay, so when you first were in these traffic jams, was your first thought, I've got to go online and figure out what's happening when, because there's always some sort of bike race or road race or walk for something.
You got it exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so you looked and you just couldn't find it.
I just couldn't find it. You know, you look, you search for like a few minutes and you find, you know, the traffic report for Boston. And you're like, oh, that wasn't on there. And then you go, oh, I'll go to boston.com. And, oh, yeah, maybe it's on there. Like, you know, then the next one, then you go, well, maybe boston.com had that other event that I got stuck in. And then you look and that's not there. It's like that.
Right, right. Yeah. So there's a little piecemeal list, but not the whole thing. Okay, so how long did it actually take you to develop an algorithm where you could put in, oh, here are a couple of examples of events that happen in Boston. Give me a list of all the events happening in Boston. How long did it take you to build that?
So right now we can build it very, very quickly, you see, because now we have the technology to do it. But it took us a while to develop the algorithm in the first place, right?
Yeah, it took several months. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Okay, so Ben, let's sort of take people back here to people who are so used to using Google every day to do search, and it works really well.
You can find, it's fabulous.
Exactly. They've worked on their algorithm, which is how Google works. Mm-hmm. What would the ability to make lists, do you think, add to our lives?
Yeah, I think it takes the next step in the sort of the logical progression. Search is great at what it does, which is to find where information is on the internet. But then it leaves the burden on the user to actually visit all the web pages and extract to pull out the information that they are actually interested in. And this was fine 10 years ago, but really within the last 5 to 10 years, there's just been an explosion of information on the internet. I think particularly user-generated content. There are people all over the world that just post enormous amounts of stuff on the internet. And some of it's, you know, what I had for breakfast, but lots of it is stuff that you actually want to know about. You know, there are experts that post stuff on the internet. And the question is, since there's so much of it, how can you get all of it? If you go to Google, then you end up doing what I find myself doing a lot, which is clicking on, you know, dozens of links and opening dozens of tabs in my browser to try and, you know, scurry through all these different websites to really get a complete picture of things. Whereas what we do is our algorithm actually visits all the websites for you. So you just type in your things. It will visit the websites for you and then automatically pull out the useful information and merge it in a nice, seamless way and just spit out to you sort of the final package.
Okay, so let's go through a couple of examples of lists that somebody might want to generate and how it works if you use the tool that you guys developed to generate lists on the internet.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So one, for instance, is a list of So we've tried a lot of experiments, and one that we did was a list of smartphone apps. The thought being that somebody just bought their first smartphone, and they've heard of these things called apps, and they want to know, you know, what should I download? Where do I start? And so we started with two popular smartphone apps, and lo and behold, we got a nice list of smartphone apps. And this is a hard thing to do usually because it's so dynamic, right? New apps come out every day, and if you have a list of apps, then it's outdated within 6 months. And so you really want to be able to get what's on the internet right now and be able to pull it all together, which is exactly what we were able to do.
And you can imagine a situation in which you search for smartphone apps and either what comes up very high up is a lot of sort of commercially sponsored stuff that people have worked very hard to make sure are the top search terms, or things that are not exactly what you want. So Wired wrote top 10 money apps and somebody else wrote top 10 apps for, you know, helping out your kids to learn to read, but that you didn't want those apps.
Yeah, and we find in practice that the sources that we're actually pulling these lists of apps from tend to be people's blogs and their own list of apps that the users put on the internet. And so it's not, like you say, really corporate-driven. It's more user-driven.
So if you pull a list of smartphone apps, right, if you did that, I'm assuming you're going to get thousands.
Absolutely.
Right, okay. So could you narrow it down? Could you then look at that list and say, well, I really want stuff that's about football. That's really what I want. And pick a couple that were about football and have the list generate from there just football-related apps.
Yes, so absolutely. So what we do is we generate these huge lists, but we actually rank them. So we make sure that the most relevant stuff is on top. And so if you were to seed it with, for instance, two football apps, then the most relevant apps would be more football apps, and those would end up at the top of the list.
Okay. And Cynthia, another example of something else you tried besides iPhone apps in this new list building capability.
Well, one example we really like is growing a list of quintessential Jewish foods. And this is a challenge because it's open-ended, right? There's no clear list of things that define Jewish cuisine. There's a lot of gray area around the boundaries of what really are quintessential Jewish foods. So we started with challah and knishes, and it grew things like matzo balls and potato latkes and gefilte fish and honey cake and kugel. It's actually quite a long list, but it really seems to capture the diversity and the essence of Jewish cooking. And we get the information from all over the internet, like recipe sites and blogs and restaurant menus. And we've actually grown lots of lists of things like, you know, past governors of New Jersey and Olympic medalists in badminton and tallest buildings in Dallas and politicians, all kinds of stuff.
So we are talking with Cynthia Rudin and Ben Lethem, both from MIT, about the idea of creating lists on the internet. They've created a new tool that helps you do that. So Cynthia, what is the hurdle? So let's go back to this Jewish foods example. What is the hurdle in, giving a computer? Okay, I'm going to give you two examples. Like you said, matzo ball soup and challah or whatever. I know two Jewish foods, but I'm going to give a party or whatever, and I need a list of a lot of them. What's the hurdle for the computer in trying to then figure out, oh my gosh, what joins challah and matzo ball soup together? Like, what's the link? And then how do I go find the other Jewish foods out there?
So there's several different challenges when it comes to growing lists, just in general, not necessarily, for Jewish foods. But, so one instance when our algorithm would have trouble would be, the fact that we're using information on the internet, right? If it's something that's specific enough, if you're searching for something that's specific enough that it's not on the internet, then the algorithm's going to have trouble. We really have trouble if people haven't compiled information on that topic somewhere, right? And then do you want to add the other one, Ben?
Yeah, and so one of the major hurdles is exactly what you were saying of how does the algorithm figure out sort of what the relationship between two things are.
Right, exactly.
Right. And we essentially try and discover the context in which things are used on the internet. And we sort of build what's the context where these things are found, and then find other things that fall that are used in the same context.
I see. So somebody puts in matzo ball soup, and when the algorithm goes to search for it, they realize it's associated with a lot of Jewish holidays, a lot
exactly.
of Jewish websites,
exactly.
Jewish recipe books, that kind of thing.
Exactly, yeah. And then we'll find other things that sort of show up in that same context. And so another time when actually you run into difficulties doing that is if things show up in many different contexts together, right? So Jewish foods might not be the only contest in which these show up. Or for another example, you might have spaghetti and lasagna. In your mind, you're thinking Italian foods, but they also share the context of both being pastas. So the algorithm might think you're looking for pastas and return a long list of pastas, some of which are Italian, some of which are not.
Okay, so let's say you put in spaghetti and lasagna and you think, this is great, I'm going to get a list of Italian foods, and then for my big, I don't know, Columbus Day party, I'll be able to sort of look at the different options that I could make. But it comes back with all different kinds of pastas because it doesn't realize that you want Italian food.
Right.
What do
you
do then?
So then, so if you really want Italian food, you just have to further constrain the context by, for instance, adding in another Italian food that isn't a pasta.
Okay. All right. Got it. So you add in some sort of, you add in cannoli, and then they realize, this is the link between these things.
That's right.
Okay. So where do you see this going, this tool? Is this going to be available to the public soon? So if they want, you know, a list of Jewish foods or a list of governors of New Jersey, they can get it.
So there are some list-growing services out there, but at the moment they're not really useful.
And there is one. We were talking a little bit before the show. You said there is one created by that Google worked on a while back. But what are the pitfalls in using that particular search?
So let me give an example. I'll go back to the Jewish foods. So the name of the algorithm that Google has available is Google Sets.
Okay.
And it's the same idea. You just put in a few terms and it grows, you know, lists of objects or things like that.
Okay. Google Sets, S-E-T-S, different sets of things. Okay.
Right. And if you put in some Jewish foods, you know, if you put in challah and knishes, it gives us things like the, you know, ever so Jewish baked chicken chimichangas and chicken quesadillas and Fanny Farmer brownies,
right?
Honey mustard salad dressing, that sort of stuff. It's not exactly the list of quintessential Jewish foods we were looking for.
Okay, yeah. It's Jewish foods on a little bit of more international stage. Okay,
yeah.
And so Ben, can you imagine this tool that you've created being available on Google someday? How might that happen?
Yeah, I would certainly hope so. We don't have power. We don't really have the infrastructure and the capital to really make this publicly available ourselves, but we've made all the information about how to do this publicly available. And I would certainly hope that Google or Bing or another search engine would work with us to implement this and make this actually usable.
And Cynthia Rudin, you have talked to Google about this possibility of them incorporating it. And what have they said so far?
Well, it seems like a lot of red tape, but I think we might end up having to go through it. I mean, at the moment, the thing that's actually stopping us from you know, putting this thing out live are those search engine companies. They're Google and, you know, Microsoft, because they'll let you search, but they won't let you do hundreds of searches per minute, which is what we need to do to release our algorithm to the public. So we just need permission from them to be able to do that kind of stuff. The other option is that they could just take our algorithm, which is publicly available, like Ben said, and just, for instance, replace Google Sets with it, and then people would be able to, you know, they would allow people the capability to grow lists.
Okay, so two questions. When you say that your algorithm right now needs Google or Bing or Yahoo, one of those search engines, to work, why exactly does it need those search engines?
Well, just as part of its functionality, it, like we said, you put in a few terms, and it does all the searching for you.
Okay, so it's got to look at thousands of websites.
Exactly, it has to look for thousands of websites, and then if it doesn't find that it has enough information to give you everything you need, it searches again, you know, and it does this, searches again and compiles again, and just the same way that a human would do it, right?
Yeah, so it has to piggyback on Google. There is no list-making capability if there's no search capability.
Yeah, that's right. You have to be able to search through the internet to be able to do this. Yes.
Okay, and another question for you. Did you ever think of, okay, well, this could be a really good idea for a business? I mean, Google built their business on an algorithm. Did you ever think, well, maybe we should make a company here and keep this algorithm formula secret?
No, I didn't. And I mean, the reason for that is because that's not what I do. You know, my research funding comes from the National Science Foundation, and it comes from, you know, MIT Lincoln Labs, who gets their funding also from the government. And this is, you know, what we do should be publicly available.
And Ben, your view is the same.
I completely agree with that. Information wants to be free, is the saying. And I think that the more we share, the better everything will be for everybody.
And finally, let me just ask you, Ben, what for you, since you've been able to use this search, what has been the most helpful list that you've been able to generate just in terms of your life?
That's a good question. Probably the Boston events, because I actually looked at I went through that list and I learned about lots of events I was interested in.
And there is no place, I think it's not just true in Boston, it's true in so many places, there is no central location.
Absolutely.
For events. Everybody's got their own website, but the question is, who is going to collate this stuff and who is going to aggregate it? And Cynthia Rudin, do you have colleagues asking you, I'd love to come up with a list of something, can I use your algorithm?
And the answer would be, of course you can, no problem.
But so far it has not been released yet, but I look forward to when it is. We've been talking about the way that we search online, and I've been speaking with Cynthia Rudin, an assistant professor at MIT Sloan School of Management, and Ben Lethem, a PhD student at MIT. Thanks to both of you for coming in and joining us.
Thank you, Kara.
And Emily Rooney is back in Studio 3. Hey, Emily.
Hey, Kara. Well, we've got our regular Monday piece of politics as usual, just in time for five debates being held around the state this week. Including Scott Brown versus Elizabeth Warren, a couple of congressional debates, and, of course, the big debate on Thursday. I think you can survive all that.
I think I can, but it's going to be a pretty exciting week.
All right, we've got Gary Quinn and David Bernstein about the next 28 days before the election. I'm Emily Rooney.
And I'm Kara Miller. You're listening to Boston Public Radio.